Well, thank you, Carol King and James Taylor, for that. Welcome back to the Bruce Salin Show, A Dad's Point of View. Just as a little point of trivia, do you know who sang that song originally? Carol King, of course, wrote it, but didn't become a performer until long after she was a very renowned songwriter. Anyway, welcome back to the Bruce Salin Show. You can email me at bruce@brucesalin.com. That's Bruce and Salin, S-A-L-L-A-N. I usually say S like in Sam's, Pastor Drew Sam's, but he is gone. So I will say S like in Dr. Jennifer Weberman. I know that doesn't go, but Dr. Jennifer Weberman is with us today for possibly two segments of the Women's Room. She is a psychologist and parent coach with over a decade of experience helping children, teens, and parents empower themselves in positive ways. She has been affectionately referred to as the Super Nanny of Springfield. Is that the Springfield of the Simpsons? As she has helped hundreds of families restore peace to their homes. She now shares everything she's learned on her own blog, which is called theparentingplayground.com. So please go visit it, theparentingplayground.com. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Weberman.
Thank you for having me. How fun was Dad Chat last week?
Well, tonight should be even more fun as we're taking on political correctness. And next week is even going to be more interesting because I have Alana Pratt as our co-host, and she will be talking about infidelity. And ironically enough, I've never done a column or radio show or anything about infidelity, and it's obviously such a big issue. And I'm thinking when I asked her, what would you like the topic to be at Dad Chat? And she gave me this very long and really, you know, smart email about issues regarding infidelity and how she feels about it. And I'm reading it and going, why the heck didn't I think of that?
Right.
Because it is obviously a big issue in couples, and so it will be a good Dad Chat. I hope I'll see you at Dad Chat tonight. But today we're talking about, in fact, everything. I have perfect synergy this week. My column, Dad Chat, and my radio show are all about political correctness gone mad, as I've characterized it. Now, given that you have a particular specialty in handling and teaching young women and teen girls on all sorts of issues, of course, not just regarding harassment or political correctness. I know you have some strong opinions about, and we were talking about this with Wayne in the previous segment, about empowering women and teaching women how to stand up for themselves versus just running to a man for help, which, of course, I think is completely counter to everything about the feminist movement and everything that we want our young girls to do, except obviously in certain egregious cases. So where would you like to go with this?
You know, in reading your article and you spoke about your personal experience with sexual harassment, I was really glad that you did that because it doesn't just happen to women. It happens to women and to men. And looking at the teen world, it happens to both boys and girls. And I know our focus today is on the girls, but just to clarify that, you know, boys get harassed by girls and other boys, maybe not with the same frequency, but it does happen. And it's complicated now for teenagers because, I mean, it was complicated enough for us when we were trying to handle sexual harassment at such a young age, but now we've got things like cyberbullying and what they call textual harassment, and when you get harassed by via text message, there's no boundary, there's no safe place to go. The person doesn't even have to be in the same room with you, and you can continue to be bombarded with those messages. And so it's very complicated for these young girls. And, you know, I think part of it is there's a very blurry line between harassment and flirting. And I think for some girls, they really don't know, or boys too, they don't know where one stops and the other starts.
Well, my experience has been that women of a certain age, and that is usually 35 or under, are just so much more on alert for anything that even begins to resemble harassment. And that, of course, was the experience that I wrote about that happened to me recently, though the earlier ones happened to me literally 30 years ago. I don't think most women my age, if I said darling to them or I invited them to lunch, would immediately assume there was an ulterior motive. But a lot of the young women, and certainly a lot of the girls that you're, and I say girls because when they're still 12 or 13 or 14, I think they're a girl. Okay,
girl.
I'm not trying to be politically incorrect by say girl versus women. I do think a girl is a girl under 14 or 15, and they become a young woman maybe thereafter, and then after 20, they're a woman. Just like a boy is a boy until he's 13, 14, or 15. Then he's a teen boy, and then a young adult, and then he's a young man, and then he's an adult. So
the scenario is so different for the teen girls than the adult women that you're referring to.
So
They're not ready to pounce on the sexual harassment, you know, issue. They're not like, all right, that's harassment. I'm going to stand up for my rights. It's actually the opposite.
Okay, so then please go on with that.
The concern is if I say no or assert myself, then I'm viewed as uptight. For the boys, can you imagine a boy saying no to sexual harassment or anything like that?
Or a sexual invitation.
What are they accused of?
You don't mean harassment. You mean an invitation.
Or any inappropriate kind of sexual contact. A boy's going to be razzed by his friends. What are you, gay? And that's what they're afraid of. And the girls are going to be accused of being uptight. For girls, if they do, they're a slut. And if they don't, they're a prude. So they're kind of...
So it's kind of a win. It's kind
that.
Of a win-win, huh?
Oh, yeah. It's a lose-lose in their eyes. And so what they end up doing is they smile and they laugh it off. And
they're
try
tortured
to act like
inside.
They're not, but inside they're really conflicted about it. So, you know, with parents, looking at the parents' role and how they can help prepare their teens for this complicated world that we have. We talk about technology, you and I, a lot, but technology has made this issue much more complicated.
I agree.
There's definitely some things that parents can do to help young girls and things that I do with young girls to help them.
Well, I would say number one is send them to a Catholic school that's all girls or all boys. That'll help.
So then you've got all the mean girl activity.
No, but I'm joking a little on the square, because one of the things that parochial schools and certain private schools do that I think should be across the board returned is they have a dress code. And I think if a dress code were actually enforced like it was when I went to elementary school. It was my generation when I was in high school in the late 60s that broke the dress code, at least in our school. It was another one of the wonderful outcomes of the 60s, said it with incredible sarcasm. But if we actually had a dress code and the girls did not wear the extraordinarily provocative clothes that they're wearing in 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, let alone high school, some of this stuff would be at least a little lessened, don't you think?
Yeah, but who's buying the clothes? All these provocative clothing that the young girl's wearing, who's buying those clothes?
Well, obviously it's mom or dad, but, you know, there are a lot of single-parent households, and there certainly are a lot of working parents that just don't have time and just give the kid money and say, go buy it, and don't pay attention. And then, of course, there are the kids that dress secretly. So they go out of the house wearing one set of clothes, and then they change on the way to school or in the bathroom, unbeknownst to the parents.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You go ahead.
The best thing you can do, though, is to equip them so that they can handle it, because after school it doesn't stop. As an adult, it takes place in the workplace. It takes place in an academic setting. We're always going to have to contend with this, and to learn how to manage it at a younger age is... you know, survival skill.
You know,
it's not going to stop for me.
I was on HuffPost Live yesterday, and the topic was sex ed. And it was actually very, very interesting. And I might want to ask you something about that in the next segment, assuming you can stay with me.
Mm-hmm.
Can you?
You've got me as long as you need me.
Oh, I like that. I consider that a form of sexual harassment, actually.
So then let me practice my assertiveness skills.
Yes, I mean, that's way too much for me. I mean, wow, I think she's really hitting on me, everybody. Can't you tell? I have a public representation of this. I think that's a perfectly good place to end. I want to hear, actually, end this segment. I really want to hear, because I know you've had your own experience in the workplace where you asserted yourself, and the response was, when you told me about it in an email, it was shocking to me that you did what I would want you to do. What I would want my daughter to do, and yet you had surprising results. So let's stay tuned for another segment of the Women's Room with Dr. Weberman, and we'll be back right after these commercials.
What I'm gonna do, 'cause there ain't no cure for the summertime blues.